Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org.
Welcome back to Baptist Basics University. I am Matthew Gage. This is lesson number 9 in our Bible History and Customs series. And today we will be talking about ancient religions, just giving a kind of a broad overview and quick look at some of the major religions that the Jews came across that are mentioned in the Bible, just some of the key ones to understand. Now, dealing with this, there's a lot we know, there's a lot we don't know, and just even to give a general overview, I know I'm going to miss stuff, but I'm going to kind of give a broad overview of how ancient religions work, some kind of terms that are kind of good to know, and we'll kind of talk about individual religions of different societies, just real briefly talk about a few of the deities. In some cases, some of these places had like thousands of gods. So we're just going to deal with a few just to, you know, maybe familiar mentioned in the Bible or just, you know, just some of the major ones. And, just hopefully just to give you a good overview of how ancient religions work. Excuse me. Religion is not a new thing. I think originally man was created religious or you know, with faith, of course, with God. And Adam and Eve, they knew God. And gradually, eventually, things begin to change as, you know, men turned away from God and they developed their own religious systems. And a lot of these have a lot in common. A lot of these even have some of the same roots, same ideas. It's funny, you'll see the same, see a god or a goddess who, you know, is over a certain certain element or, you know, say like harvest or war. And then throughout all these societies, they have the exact same personality. They have the exact same powers or weaknesses. So it's kind of interesting. You can kind of see a little the evolution of this if you study it out. But you know, eventually these false religions, these pagan religions, shall we say, you know, took over, and most of mankind began to worship in these different forms. So what we'll do today is just give you a decent overview of how some of these religions work. Here's some terms I just want to kind of throw out to begin with. Polytheism is a belief or worship of many gods. And some anthropologists will tell you this is, you know, mankind is just naturally polytheistic, that they naturally will believe, you know, there's a tree god, there's a water god, there's a snow god, there's a sun god. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but some anthropologists will say that. But this generally is how most ancient religions worked. It's not just one god. It's many gods, many deities of varying levels, some more powerful than others. And you'd have one thing like harvest or you know, the ocean, or even over certain animals, they would have a certain god or deity associated with each of those things. Not one god overviewing all of them, but all these different elements having their own specific god with its own specific personality, with its own, you know, specific attributes. Another word, and this is a new one to me as I was saying, this is called henotheism. I think that's how you say it, H-E-N-O theism. And this is worship of one central god, although other deities are believed to exist. So this really, there's forms of this that you'll see in the ancient world where a location will have a central god that they do worship, and most of their worship revolves around this one god, but it's not that they deny other gods to exist. They just mainly worship one. So in practice, they may appear monotheistic, but they're actually polytheists. Which I've already mentioned, the next one, monotheism. This is belief and worship of one god, of one deity. The major monotheistic religions today are Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, because they believe in one God. So this is a very rare thing in the ancient world for societies to focus and have one God denying the existence of other gods. Very, very rare. In fact, outside of Judaism, it's extremely rare in the ancient world. One last term I'll throw out is called syncretism. And this is combining different beliefs and then, you know, while melding the practices of various schools of thought. So this is something you see a lot in ancient religions. And we'll talk a little bit about this, but Rome, as they conquered, would kind of bring in outside religions and kind of bring them into the fold underneath the Roman religion. And so, you know, certain other gods would become associated with the gods of the Roman pantheon, you know, as and all these different associations take place where even though they're two different religions, two different things, they would kind of become kind of meld in itself into one thing. And when you're studying kind of the evolution of religion, this is a word that you'll see a lot. And you can really, really see this in kind of as things go along. Like I was saying, you can kind of trace these, you know, this lineage of these deities. And, you know, it's amazing how these societies will have the same God over the same things with the same attributes. Well, part of that is due to this concept of syncretism. Okay, let me give you just a general overview of how ancient religions work. Generally, deities are thought to have powers over certain natural events. You'd have, you know, the rain god, the sun god, the harvest god. You'd have a god of fertility. You'd have a god of the river. You'd have, you know, a god of birds, a god of, you know, of all these different things. And sometimes they'd be gods of two or three different things. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, there'd be one god over one concept, over one area of life, over one natural phenomenon. As far as worship goes, these worship practices revolved around local temples. And a temple would be devoted usually to one deity, sometimes more than one. But basically, you'd have, you know, a temple devoted to Zeus, a temple of devoted to Apollo or Aphrodite or one of those, and all the worship took place around that temple. And generally, in the area, like we're talking about with the idea of henotheism, that you know, it would appear like, oh, well, the, you know, the people of Ephesus, they had the temple of Artemis. Well, they must have just worshipped Artemis. No, they didn't. They believed in many other gods, but most of the local worship revolved around Artemis. So the general worship would be around the temple that was local. So, you know, this town may, most of its worship may be around Zeus, and this one may be around Apollo, and this one around this god, and this one around this god. You know, generally revolved around whatever temple was local. That's the one that, you know, the worship revolved around. Private worship in homes is also practiced. Different forms of sacrifice and devotions and practices and such. I just don't want you to think that everything happened at the temple, and if it wasn't a temple, it really wasn't worship. There were, you know, votives and idols and stuff inside homes also. Generally speaking, these temples, and we'll talk a little bit about how things work in the temple. Generally, these would have some type of a cult image or statue, usually claimed to be of miraculous creation. You know, the Temple of Artemis in Ephesus, for instance, they believe that the image fell from the earth like a meteorite or something. And but generally, there's a statue or something inside these temples, and what, you know, something big, grandiose, or whatever, and usually kind of hidden from public view. It's not out front; it's kind of inside the temple itself. But some type of statue or idol would be there. In the temple, various forms of sacrifices and rituals would take place, offering of incense, you know, burnt offerings, prostitution, sometimes child sacrifice, human sacrifice, treasuries, would be there from offerings and stuff that were given. But a lot of the worship revolves around these temples. And I've already talked about how worship revolves around locally, the deities locally. So, and this is when you study out the history of some of these cities, you'll see, well, they had this major temple, and so a lot of the worship revolved around there. So it's not like, the Greeks, every city had to have, temples to Apollo and Hera and Zeus and all the other ones. Now, they would have one, two, maybe three, depending on the size of the city, and they would generally worship around that one deity right there. And now they would, different rites and different things, according to the year. It's not like, just because they have a temple devoted to Zeus doesn't mean they don't do things, for the harvest associated with another god. They would still practice those, but in honor of or, that other god. But they would still, most of the religions revolved around whatever the local temple was. And usually that would be revolved around local legend, local superstition that, this is where this god was born, or this is where this god did this, and that's why that temple would be raised there, which came first, the temple or the legend, Did they build the temple because of the legend, or did the legend come up because they built the temple? Who knows? One of the key things about ancient religion is that they would perform various rituals, and they had to be performed correctly. They would, for instance, with the Greeks and the Romans, they would have sacrifices, and they would like get cattle, and they would decorate them up, put flowers and stuff on their horns, march them through town, and then sacrifice them at the temple. That they would do some things like that. Well, everything had to go right. If for one reason, the cow just didn't decide to cooperate, they would stop and get another cow and start over. They got all the way to the temple, and then the cow just didn't seem happy about being sacrificed. They would stop, go get more cows, and start the whole procession over. They were very particular about doing things right. And there was a lot of emphasis put on doing things in order, in the right way. And as I say, if things weren't performed correctly, that they thought the gods would be mad at them, or, the benefit of the ceremony would not take place. So as I said, they would either start over, or, it'd be considered a terrible omen that something didn't go right. So, but just remember that the emphasis is put on performing these ceremonies correctly in the right order, in every detail. Now, one of the big areas of debate, especially when it comes later into the Roman Empire, is how much did people actually believe this stuff? Did they really believe, in Jupiter and Saturn and Venus? Did they really believe in these deities? It's very hotly debated about how much. Earlier in the history, some of the earlier religions we're talking about, it's generally believed, everybody believed them. By the time of the Roman Empire, there is evidence of some more secular movement taking place, and maybe some of the wealthy and elite maybe just giving lip service to the ancient religions while not being true believers themselves. But generally speaking, I think these people did believe it. If they didn't believe it, they wouldn't have done it. And you can say, well, maybe they didn't believe it and they just did it just to be safe. Well, possibly, but there's no sign of them trying to really, as a society, get rid of religions. Now, every now and then there's a philosopher or a writer come along that kind of makes fun of some of the gods and some of the rituals, but that's not the norm. In general, everybody seems to have been happy with these, religions and practices, and followed them faithfully. As far as when you're dealing with these religions, there is a general system in place in each culture or region. So we can say, this is the Greek religion, this is the Roman religion, this is the Egyptian religion. But especially when we deal with the Greeks and the Romans, there are local variations, or what we're talking about, syncretism, syncretic systems. So, for instance, the Temple of Artemis, that particular Artemis, Diana, you know, the Greek or Latin form of that goddess, the cult image looks nothing like the general, you know, images of Artemis or Diana. It's actually a very Eastern looking, deity. And even some of the things they worshiped that deity before, for are not the general rule for that deity. So, you know, there's a local variation there. So when we're dealing with this and I say, well, you know, this god was associated with this, you can probably say, well, in this city, they worshiped it in this way. Well, that is very likely true. There's a broad general system in place, but locally or in a specific region, you know, there can be, it can be very different, especially in practice. Generally speaking, it's not like, you know, well, this believes Zeus is the king of the gods and this one doesn't. Now, that they generally would accept that, but Zeus may have different attributes given to him. Zeus may have different powers. He may be over different things. He may be revered differently in different ways. You know, the practices of the temple may be totally different. But so when we're dealing with this, we're dealing basically with the general overview of how these systems work, and just understand that that's just a broad overview, that there are exceptions, there are changes, especially on a local level. Okay, we're going to deal with a number of different groups. We're going to deal with a broad overview of the Canaanite religions, the religion in Egypt, and then Assyria / Babylon. We'll deal with both. They're kind of attached to each other. They're very similar. Then we'll deal with Greece and Rome. That's kind of the overview of the different different groups we want to deal with. Okay, Canaan. This is just generally what did the people believe, you know, before the establishment of Israel, you know, before they came out of Egypt and came in under Joshua. What was going on? And, you know, what did they believe? You know, what did these different groups, you know, the Jebusites and those different groups that were there in the land, what did they believe? Generally, we don't know a whole lot. We know it's a polytheistic religion, and there was human sacrifice. There's plenty of evidence where they found, like, sacrificed babies, you know, like in the foundation of different temples. But it's a fairly primitive system, but it's a polytheistic system. So a few sample deities, Astarte, which is the goddess of fertility and war, Baal, which means master. We see Baal mentioned in quite a bit in the Old Testament. That name means master, and that can actually apply to a bunch of different gods. Dagon, which is, I believe, associated with the Philistines, is a god of crop fertility and grain, so a god of harvest. And then Melkart, it was a king of the city, in Tyre, and a god of the underworld and the cycle of vegetation. He's also kind of associated with Hercules at later times. And he's actually the one, the reason I put this on there is that deity is the one that's on the shekels that we talked about in the coinage episode. So the silver shekels they used in Jerusalem at the temple. This is the deity, this pagan deity that will show up on those later. Okay, the Egyptian religion. This is one that's fascinated people for a long time, really since, I guess, Napoleon went and kind of brought in the renewed interest in Egypt. The Egyptian religion is polytheistic also. Give you just a few sample deities. Atum. I'm probably going to blow a lot of these, but Atum or Adam, he's the creator deity. He made things. Ra is considered like one of their major gods. He's a creator deity also and associated with the sun. Amun is the hidden one. He's a local creator deity. So notice, I mean, it's not just one creator, there's a bunch of creators. Ptah is a creator deity, also the god of craft. Isis is a goddess of magic, motherhood and fertility, and hangs out with Osiris. Osiris is a merciful judge of the dead in the afterlife and associated with Isis. You know, they're like husband and wife or something. So you'll hear Osiris and Isis. Ra is the one usually you'll hear as kind of the main god in Egypt. There's also a brief period under Pharaoh Amenhotep IV where they tried to actually set up a monotheistic system. And he actually tried to like do away with the old religion and set up just this one god, Aten, A-T-E-N. And basically, once he died, they said, well, that was fun, and went back to their old ways. And so it's amazing, though, if you study out that little period, they were like, you know, chiseled out the names of all the old gods when they came in to become monotheistic. Then when they became polytheistic again, they went and chiseled out all the names of the monotheistic gods. So it's kind of a funny, interesting thing to study. Egypt, of course, they're famous for their funerary practices with the mummies, and that had a lot to do with their views of the afterlife. They packed the king's tombs full of stuff and full of treasures for them to use in the next life. So they believed in life after death. As far as their deities goes, they had a bunch of deities for different things. There is a theory out there that the 10 plagues that take place during the book of Exodus, they are actually associated. I've done the study on that, and some of it's a little bit of a stretch, but you can actually associate different Egyptian gods with those plagues. So it could be God was showing them how powerless their gods were. So anyway, that's just a quick overview of Egypt. Okay, Assyria and Babylon. We're going to tie these together because it's kind of the same family, same general culture between these two. And this is generally it's the religions of the Sumerian and the Akkadian people. Also, it's polytheistic. Just catch a drift, all of these are polytheistic. A few sample gods. Ishtar, or Inanna, is a goddess of love and war and patroness of Nineveh. So that kind of comes back into play. Sin, or Nana, is the moon god. Shamash is the sun god. Marduk is a patron deity of Babylon and eventually becomes kind of the head of the Babylonian pantheon, kind of becomes the main guy's Marduk. And then we have Tammuz, who's the god of food and vegetation. So, if you may catch a drift, like I was talking about with this family tree, did you notice, you know, the goddess of love and war? That's going to come back, Inanna, and how there's a moon god and a sun god. You know, we've talked about, you know, Egypt had a sun god. And, you know, even Astarte with the Canaanites is fertility and war. So you see the same general concepts associated with these different gods. And I also want to throw out, while we're dealing with this, there's an ancient book that we have today called the Epic of Gilgamesh, which talks quite a bit about these different deities. I believe it's Babylonian. And so you can get an idea of kind of their religion through it. Also, interestingly, what's most famous for among Christians is that it contains an account very similar to Noah's flood. So just want to throw that out there. Okay. Greece. Now we're getting into the more fun, more common ones. Greece. Greece is polytheistic and a very extensive mythology. A lot of this has been preserved. We know a lot of these stories about these different gods, you know, whether it's the feats of Hercules or the multitude of relationships that Zeus had, and, you know, or, you know, or Zeus, or Achilles, or, you know, some of these, you know, the Iliad, the Odyssey, things like that. There's a lot of mythology, a lot of stories involved, a lot of, you know, personality given to these gods. I'm going to give you kind of a group called the Dodecatheon, which is the 12 Olympian deities. These were, and there's actually a variation in this list, but these were considered to be the 12 main deities that were on Mount Olympus and the main ones. And a lot of these will probably be familiar with you if you've done any study in Greece. You have Zeus. He's the king of the gods, god of the sky, thunder and lightning, and law, order, and justice. He's the main guy. usually seen with a thunderbolt or something. His wife is Hera. She's queen of the gods, goddess of marriage, women, and birth. You have Poseidon. He's a god of the sea, earthquakes, and horses. Kind of an odd group there. Demeter, which is the goddess of harvest. She doesn't get a lot of press nowadays, but she's very important in a lot of these different regions. There's a lot of coins with her picture on them because, I mean, harvest was what it was all about. If you didn't get a good harvest, you know, you may not survive the winter. So the goddess of harvest was always, always very revered in these agrarian societies. We have Athena. She's the goddess of wisdom, warfare, divine intelligence, architecture, and crafts. You have Dionysus, who's a god of wine, theater, and ecstasy. He's the party guy. You have Apollo. He's one of the main ones. God of music, poetry, plagues, oracles, sun, medicine, light, and knowledge. So they put a lot of stuff on him. You have Artemis, the goddess of the hunt, forest, and hills, and the moon. So notice there we had Apollo with the sun, Artemis with the moon. There's gods associated with these things. Ares, he's the god of war and violence. Aphrodite, the goddess of love, beauty, and sexuality. Hephaestus, he's the god of fire, metalworking, stonemasonry, and art of sculpture. And Hermes, which he's the messenger of the gods. He's the god of commerce, thieves, travelers, sports, athletes, and border crossing fish. And he's also the guide to the underworld. So he's a very busy guy. As far as the Greek religion goes, they celebrate a lot of things with festivals and games, a lot of athletic competitions. Right now, as I'm recording this, the Olympics are going. That's part of their religion was these, were these big games like this. That's part of how they celebrated. And big festivals to celebrate these gods, very famous for that. They had their temples. They would sacrifice. They had altars there. A lot of the heritage of the Greek religion to us nowadays is that extensive mythology, is those stories that they had about their gods and their doings, and from not just the main deities to the little, semi-gods, demigods and stuff, you know, that were half-human, half-god, like Hercules and some of these. A lot of classic stories that have been passed down from this heritage. Okay, Rome. We're probably going to spend the most time with Rome, which actually this is flying through way quicker than I expected. Rome is also polytheistic. It had a bunch of gods. A couple of things that were kind of unique to Rome, or not necessarily unique, but kind of important to the Roman religion. They venerated their dead ancestors. In fact, these well-to-do families would often have like a room with death masks and stuff of their ancestors. They're very big on their family and their ancestors. They would worship dead ancestors. This kind of translated in under the Roman Empire to the imperial cult, which was veneration of Caesar, of the dead Caesars. So it kind of translated into that. And it wasn't new. I mean, a lot of these Eastern religions would, you know, worship their king or ruler as a god, but Greece didn't do that. Rome didn't really worship living gods, you know, emperors as gods, although guys like Nero and Caligula may have tried it. They really waited till they were dead, and then they kind of would then deify them and worship them. And also was very important as far as this was kind of the litmus test for being faithful to Rome. This was the test they would give to the Christians. I'm like, well, if you won't worship, you know, offer incense to, you know, Caesar, then, you know, we can't trust you. So this was kind of a test. You'll see it evolves around that imperial cult. Okay, we're going to deal with the 12 major deities, and I'll probably blow this pronunciation, but the Dei Consensus. And these are another list of 12 major deities. And it's funny, these appear to almost all these have an equivalent to the 12 Olympian gods that we covered under Greece. You have Juno. That's the equivalent of Hera, so kind of the queen of the gods. Vesta. This is equivalent to the Greek god Hestia, which we didn't cover, but it's goddess of hearth, home, and family. Vesta is very important in Rome. Associated with her, the Vestal Virgins, which were these group of women who dedicated their lives in service to Vesta, and also had a big archive that they took care of stuff. Minerva is equivalent to Athena. Ceres, which is equivalent to Demeter. It's the goddess of agriculture, grain crops, fertility, and motherly relationships. So, Diana is basically the same as Artemis. That's important when you read, kind of study out Paul's events at Ephesus. Venus, she's the same as Aphrodite. Mars, same as Ares. Mercury, same as Hermes. Jupiter, same as Zeus. Neptune, same as Poseidon. Vulcan, same as Hephaestus. I know I'm blowing that one too. Apollo, he's the same as Apollo. they didn't change his name. So that's just a general overview, and there's many other gods, in both the Greek and the Roman systems. If those are kind of the main ones, and of course you may recognize some of those gods. Those are the ones we named the planets after, Venus, Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, Neptune, Pluto. All those are named after Roman gods. Some terms to know when it comes to the Roman religion. You have where we get religion from. It's actually religio. And it means an obligation to the gods, something expected by them from human beings, or a matter of particular care or concern is related to the gods. So religion at its basest form is basically, making the gods happy. And if we do this, if we offer this, that'll make the gods happy. It's part of the reason a lot of Christian theologian stuff don't like the word religion, because they say, well, we don't have religion. We don't have to do these things to earn our way to heaven or earn the favor of God. We're under grace. Through our faith, we're saved. We don't have to work for it. We don't have to work to keep earning it. So in that sense, yeah, it is true that religion really is not a good term for what Christianity is, but in a broad sense, it works. Superstitio means doing or believing more than was necessary. So we think of superstitions nowadays as these odd little beliefs, walking underneath ladders, hanging horseshoes over the door, carrying rabbit's foots, things like that. But in the ancient Roman world, superstitio basically meant you did a little bit more than everybody else. You got a little carried away with religion. When Paul was preaching on Mars Hill, he told the people, after seeing the altar to the unknown god, he says, look, you're too superstitious. Well, why were they superstitious? They were being above and beyond, going to crazy lengths to make the gods happy. They were doing more than was necessary in their system in trying to take care of even the gods they didn't know. So that's kind of insight into that. Mysteria. This is a secret rite or doctrine. This is a secretive cult. So if you hear something about the mysteries, we're not talking about Agatha Christie or, Sherlock Holmes or something like that. And when it comes to ancient religions, the mysteries, and this doesn't mean these were really wacky stuff, is like really obscure gods. Even some of the main gods had their mysteries, but these are very secretive groups. In Rome during New Testament times, there was very big cults, like with around Egyptian gods and different Eastern gods, and they were called mysteries. They weren't called cults, they were called mysteries. And a phrase I want to throw out there, kind of give you a general description of the Roman religion. Do ut des, which I hope I'm saying that right. I'm not very good with Latin, but it means I give that you might give. That was the whole basis of the Roman and a lot of ancient religions. It was, I'm going to give this sacrifice to you, the deity of the harvest. That way you will give me a good harvest. So everything was based on, the human performance. The human performance of these religious practices affected the performance of the gods and whatever they had control over. So, but that's that works-based relationship that this that these religions had. You know, I give that you might give. I'm giving this to you. I'm performing this action so that you will perform the action back to me. Roman, as far as religion goes, there's some few notes. Festivals, they had a bunch of them, about 40 in a year, devoted to different gods. And that's basically at Rome. That locally, they had a bunch of different stuff. But that's like in Rome itself. As far as practice goes, they did have prayers, vows, oaths that they would do. Individual households would have gods, would often have like a little votive or altar type thing devoted to certain gods that were special to the family. Sacrifice was part of it. They would offer sacrifices at these different at the different temples to different gods for different reasons. You know, just whatever you wanted. You wanted a good harvest, you sacrifice this god. You know, things like that. When we talked about syncretism, well, when you're dealing with Rome, that's very, you have to really understand, because Rome, basically, as they conquered, they just kind of absorbed the religions of these other groups. So, you know, they began, it's really hard, there's been a lot of study developed, you know, what did the first Romans believe? Well, it probably was some kind of variation similar to like the Greek religion, but different. But, you know, from the Latins that they, you know, that they conquered, they, and the, well, the Latin people there from the region, and the, oh goodness, I'm losing the name. But the other group of people that they conquered, I can't remember, but I've gone blank on the name, but they basically, you know, took their gods. And then, like, you know, as they really got in tight with Greece and conquered Greece, they kind of absorbed all those Greek gods, which, as I say, you know, they're very similar systems, so they kind of meld very easily. But even as they would go in and conquer these different regions, they would absorb these religions. They would, you know, take their gods and put statues of them in the Roman pantheon. So that, you know, they basically absorb these religions, say, oh, okay, you worship that way. Well, good. You know, look, you're part of us now. Yeah, you can worship that god too. We'll all worship him. So they were very open to these other religions. They didn't come in, just force everybody to convert to theirs. They basically just absorbed these other religions. This was a problem with Christianity, because Christianity said, we don't have a statue to put in there. You know, we don't have that idol. We don't work that way. And we don't worship those other ones. You know, we're not polytheist. We only believe in one God. So there was a big to do. And even with the Jews, very similar issues that really had hard time getting along with Rome on religious issues. And last, I want to emphasize, especially with the Roman Empire, we talked about the broad system with local variations. When it comes to the Roman Empire, there's a general system in place, and there's local variations in belief and practice. So just take it all with a grain of salt, you know, the broad overview. And when you get to studying localized places, the temples and everything may work completely different. And even the Roman religion was subject to change. Even this kind of gets us into like New Testament times, but even post New Testament, there were changes in practice and belief until finally Christianity became recognized and became the official religion. And, you know, the paganism was on its way out. But anyway, I hope that you've learned something. I hope that that's kind of a good overview. It's something that a lot of people just kind of skim over. And I've just touched the tip of the iceberg on all this, especially if you really want to get into all the different gods and the different myths and stuff. There's tons of stuff out there. Most of this information got off Wikipedia, and a lot of good information out there. Very interesting stuff. If you want to study it, I'm usually one, I prefer to study what I believe instead of what other people believe. I'd rather know the truth. You know, I'd rather know what I believe. But in case like this, it's kind of good to know, to have a good understanding for the historical context of the Bible, to understand some of this. So anyway, that's it for today. I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening. Check out BaptistBasics.org for other resources. Email me, podcast@BaptistBasics.org. You can follow us on Facebook. You can see the link there on BaptistBasics.org. One little note. I think I've talked about the general outline I was going to do for this series. I pretty much have convinced myself I'm going to do one more lesson. The 10th lesson, we're going to cover warfare. And I may put off some of the other ideas maybe for another series, but kind of getting behind. Hadn't had a lot of time to record. Summertime's been kind of busy, but I'd like to wrap this up and kind of move on to something else. So I'm going to cover Warfare because I'm really looking forward to doing that. But we're going to probably, unless I change my mind between now and when I record and release the episode on Warfare, that probably will be the last one I do in this series for now. And maybe we'll revisit and do another series later on, but I'd like to move on and do something else. So one more lesson, and we'll cover Warfare and it, unless I change my mind. Anyway, I appreciate you listening. I will see you next time. I hope it's been helping and a blessing to you.